Woodworkers for the Blind presents Dennis Walker. And you can find Woodworkers for the Blind on the web at ww4b.org. Check it out. A lot of blind and visually impaired woodworkers sharing ideas, thoughts, projects, and a lot of how-to-dos with each other. It's a great community. Check it out. ww4b.org. And now our host, Daryl Vickers, will take it away.
All right. Well, this is Daryl. Welcome, everybody. Seems like we got a pretty good crowd on here. Our guest tonight is Dennis Walker from Meridian, Idaho. Hi, Dennis.
Hey. Well, as Daryl said, I'm Dennis Walker, and
You're going to let me answer a couple questions first.
Okay.
No, I'm just messing. I just love to mess with Dennis so much. If he doesn't hear from me at least twice or three times a week, he's completely lost in life. So, Dennis, now you can tell us a little bit about yourself, sir.
Okay. Well, as Daryl says, I'm from Meridian, Idaho. I was born and raised in Idaho. I grew up on a farm in eastern Idaho and worked on my dad's farm and my neighbor's farm until after high school. Then I started working construction. And during that time, working construction, I joined the National Guard. And in May of 1968, they activated the National Guard unit. And in September of 68, I got a full expense paid vacation to Vietnam. And I was only there until January of 69. While operating a bulldozer, I was told I found a booby trap rocket. I spent 11 months in a hospital, numerous surgeries. Then they decided there wasn't any more they could do. So they discharged me directly to the Palo Alto, California VA Blind Rehabilitation Center, where I always considered it. It's where I learned how to be blind. Then it was when you went, it was like 4 months to learn Braille and mobility and written communications and manual skills. After I got out of that, I started college. And it's when I found out that I should have studied a lot harder in high school, because there's a lot I found out that I didn't know and should have known in high school. And then in February of 71, Carol and I got married. And after that spring semester, we moved to Boise, and where I attended Boise State University. And after graduation, I went to work for the Department of Veterans Affairs as a benefits counselor. I worked there for about 23 years. When I retired, that's when I really got involved in woodworking. I built a shop in the backyard that's 24 foot square and filled it up full of tools over the years. And that's where I started doing the majority of my woodworking. Of course, before that, I just had my first tool that I bought, power tool, was a radial arm saw, which I figured was the most dangerous tool that they make. Then I bought a shop smith and used it for a few years. And I got tired of changing the setups to do different things. So then I started buying individual tools, and it's a never ending progress of buying tools. We got to going to a tool. Well, it was the American Woodworking and Furniture Supply Convention that they held in Las Vegas every other year, and Atlanta, Georgia, the opposing year. And that's where you could get your hands on the tools, and if you had questions, there was someone there that could answer them. I come home with a lot of tools from those shows. I am totally blind. I had to have my eyes removed because of the pressure in them. I'm 76 years old, or 76 years young.
Mr. Dennis.
Yeah.
So you live in Meridian, which is just outside of Boise still, right?
That is correct.
How big is your shop now, would you say?
Okay, the shop now, Carol and I moved to a smaller home and we had it built. And I've always said that I built a workshop and added a little house to it. It's an oversized double car garage with Carol's workshop that we had in the back. It's 41 foot deep and 24 feet wide.
And is it pretty full, sir?
Yes, it's full. Since we had the home built, I told them I wanted a breaker panel that I could expand. So what they did is give me 240 volt service. So I've got all kinds of 220 outlets in it and different breakers for 110. And
so in your shops, one of the reasons that we're doing this call with Dennis, besides he's an interesting guy and one of my best friends, even though I pick on him all the time, is Dennis has more digital tools that have something to say than anybody I know. And if you've been in WW4B for a while, you know that out on the list for years, you know, we talk about different kinds of things we wish they would talk, or we figure out ways to make them talk. And Dennis has found different things, and it's going to let him explain just a few things. And a lot of these things that Dennis may talk about, you're not going to find them on the market anywhere or anything.
How I got started in talking tools was, you know, it's always been kind of an interest to get these things to talk. But when I go to these wood shows in Las Vegas, you know, and find somebody who was selling a tool that had a digital display, I'd always ask them, is there any way we could add speech to this? And there would be some that would just tell me, no, can't be done. Others would tell me, that sounds like a great idea. And they'd call me a couple weeks later and says, yeah, it's a good idea, but the boss said, no, there's no market for it. But I found one company that makes measuring tools for building cabinets called ProScale. And they're out of, it's either North Carolina or South Carolina. And I asked them about the table saw fence, digital fence. Is there any way they could make it talk? They kind of chuckled and said, yeah, we've already done that. Said, but we've decided there's no market for it. So that's how I got started with talking tools. It was a $50 modification to their digital display to where I could run a cable out to a speech synthesizer box, which they said you use a box called Voiceman. And they just happened to have one that they'd sell me that was used. And from there, it's went on to eye gauging. I found that their caliper, you could use a cable hooked to either a USB port to a computer or a cable to this Voiceman. That was on their caliper. Then they added Bluetooth to it to where it acted as though it was a keyboard and would send information to a Bluetooth device, such as the iPhone, that would accept like a keyboard input, Bluetooth keyboard input, and that ran on either a notes or on a calculator. And that, you know, worked pretty good. They also come out with the angle cube that worked on a cable to start with and then went to the Bluetooth. But then Wixie come out with their angle cube and protractor that has its own app for running on the iPhone. That is, I think, the best ones out there.
I want to interject something here because you'll notice this as I'm going to ask a couple more questions. But you see, this talking tool thing, they don't just happen. You know, you have to be proactive in talking to people. A friend of our list, Louis Gravani, passed away now. Louis found a guy called Mario Salazar out in Colorado who had, at that time, and this goes back about 15 years, had a digital miter gauge. And Louis just asked her if they could make it talk, and they did. And I own one of those, and Dennis does. And then we got to talking at one of the workshops with a digital protractor that Actually, America Printing House had a prototype made from it, but they never went on and made them where you could buy them. But that got Dan Rossi and myself talking with Barry Wixie of Wixie Digital. And that didn't happen overnight. That took about 5 years, but that's how we ended up with the Angle Cube and the Protractor. So when you see these things out on the market nowadays, you know, and you wonder why they don't talk it. The market is, the instant answer to all of them is there's no market for it. But, you know, there can be if there's, you know, if we can generate either enough demand or someone who's just willing to spend the time to do it. And that's how a lot of these things came to pass. So, Dennis, you also have, I think it's called a DRO. They're like scales that you have mounted to your miter saw fence, right?
Okay. Yeah, it's the same digital readout that's on the fence from a table saw that has a bar that has a sliding stop hook to that I can measure the distance from the saw blade over to the stop.
Same company though, right? ProScale?
Same company is ProScale. I think they still will adapt their digital readout. The problem is the speech. The voicemail is no longer made. I think it was made for Michitoya and they quit having it made or quit making it.
Excuse me, there's another tool that people on our list know of, MLCS Woodworking, and MLCS. And they specialize mostly in routers and router bits, but they have all kinds of tools and accessories. And they came out with a digital lift for the router table. And at first, you had a screen to look at. Of course, that would help you if you were sighted, but it, you know, you could punch in whatever height you want. It would raise it up automatically. Then they came out and connected, got rid of the screen and started using a notepad. I think, what brand is that, Dennis? It's a
Android. Yeah, it's only done with an Android.
But there again, you know, they came out with that, but an Android actually has a voiceover you can get to. It's called TalkBack, and it's an add-on to an Android phone or a tablet. But Dennis talked to the man that wrote the software to control it on that Android pad, and the guy adapted it for speech. Now, you can get that router lift. It's kind of on my wish list today with an Android tablet.
As far as duplicating things, as if you need stopped dados where you need to raise the bit up a little bit, make the cut a little, raise the bit up a little higher. This thing just really works great because you can set the bit at the height you want the dado and then zero it out. Then lower the bit down below the router table and then you start the router and move the router up where you've zeroed it out, but the speed of the raising this bit can be controlled from 1 to 100%. So you can just keep sliding your board back and forth against the fence and the stops, and this bit keeps coming up. Once it hits the zero set, it'll quit raising. And then you just turn your router off and take the board off. And there's all kinds of things you can do with it. It's fun to play with. So,
Dennis, I know you have found ways to support your habit, let's say, of woodworking, correct?
Yeah. As far as supporting my habit, I know George, he's making a living off teaching classes, woodworking, and I'm sure he'll agree I think almost impossible to make a living doing woodworking. I do it just as a hobby only. But I have, you know, I've made all my kids' furniture and a lot of the grandkids' furniture. Some of the things that I've made, I've sold. I had access to like these old combination post office box doors that I made piggy banks with them, just a box, and put this post office box door on the front and had a slot in the top to put your money. And I sold many of those because they're just unique. And I gave a lot of them away as gifts. Other thing that I found that people thought was unique was cheese slicers. You know, I would glue up different species of wood to adapt this or attach this cheese slicing mechanism on. And or if you got a brick of cheese, you could slice off a nice even slice with it. And again, I sold those and gave them as gifts. And that's helped support my habit. But probably my biggest thing that I make anymore that makes money is cremation burial urns. A funeral home contacted me probably 15 years ago and asked if I'd make them. And I had made one for a friend of mine. And so I told him, yes. So I've been making them for this funeral home for over this 15-year period. And that's probably one of the things that's kept me where I can buy more tools. But it's something that it's all it is just a box. The corners are all dovetailed and the top's glued on, the bottom's screwed on. It's all solid wood. And, you know, if you're interested in possibly making a little income off woodworking, you know, that's an option. If you'd make one of these, take it to a funeral home and see if they're interested in purchasing them.
And you also used to do the flag cases too, right?
Yeah, I did the flag cases also, and the funeral homes bought those, but I quit making them for a couple reasons. That since Carol died, my driver for running for parts is not available anymore. And then I have tried my hand at staining, and I can't stain anything to get it to come out right. So I gave up on them. What I had to stain is to put the flag in a flag case. I made the back out of a quarter-inch thick piece of Baltic birch plywood. And if I made the flag case out of, say, cherry wood, then we'd stain that Baltic birch plywood with cherry stain. And it just become more frustrating, and I couldn't get it evenly stained, and so I just quit making them. But that's they were very interested in the flag cases, you know, the big burial flag cases. So,
and those things, like I said, you know, some initiative, you know, there are ways to do it, you know, not to have to be a giant production kind of shop like George Wurzel has a kind of a production shop, but you could do things in a smaller shop too. And I don't know that you're going to retire on it, but you can at least, like we say, support our habit by doing it. So I'm going to say a couple more things and I'm going to open it up for some questions. But the one thing I want to talk about the digital tools, because it's already come up, and that is, you know, why can't we just have this output? Well, I've done it. I've written code and made tools talk, and it's not an easy process. The digital does not come out as ASCII text. You know, it's not sending out a one or a two number, a rigger whole number that we all know, and everybody has their own proprietary way of doing it. So even if a device has output, knowing what that output is not an easy thing. Now, if you know the company and you can talk to them, maybe they can help you with it. But, you know, we talk about the old days of serial RS-232 or whatever. It may use that connector, but that's not exactly the data. And I personally don't know enough to read those pins and figure all that stuff out. I guess if somebody could, you could make the interface and then you could hook it up to a Raspberry Pi. Nowadays, you don't even need a special speech box anymore, though they still make them out there. But so I just wanted to throw that out, that some of this stuff, it may look simple and seem like a simple thing, but it isn't. And there again, it's supply and demand. But we do have things out there right now that you can, that are worthwhile, like calipers and angle and protractors and that kind of stuff that work really well to help us with woodworking. But I will now shut up. And if you guys have a question, I wish you just state your name and then ask your question to whoever. And I ran them all off, Dennis.
Well, if there's no questions, I'll bring one thing up. On the list a few months ago, everyone wanted a CNC and the Carverite come up. Well, Mario Salazar also made the speech box for the Carverite. He actually did not do the design of it. It's another guy by the name of Jay Bergen. And I sent a box back to him asking if he would modify it. And he runs three or four different businesses, and he's extremely busy. He says he'll modify this speech box for me, but it's been 2 years. And every time I talk to him, it's still sitting on his desk. So, you know, it's something that people have the knowledge to do it, but they don't have the time. And I've talked to Carverite, and they will not give you the information of what the output is on that Carverite machine. So
anyone have any questions?
This is Jay. I have one. I am interested in one of the eye-gauging talking calipers, and they appear to come in 4, 6, and 8 inches. And is there any reason to get a shorter one other than the short ones might be able to fit in a smaller space? There's maybe a $20 difference between the two shorter ones and the big 8-incher.
These are the calipers or the protractor?
The calipers that have Bluetooth output.
Okay, as far as the size you buy, I think eye gauging makes them in 6, 8, and 12 inches. This depends upon, you know, is there a board width or width that you're wanting to measure?
Usually I'm going to be using a click rule because it'll probably be faster.
As far as the accuracy of the caliper, you know, if you're measuring like how big is a bearing, or you only need a short one. If you get to measuring like a board 6 inches wide, you don't need a caliper. Yeah, I don't think you need to be that accurate. A click rule's adequate for when you get that wide. So I would think if you want to be that accurate with like measuring drill bits or anything like that, just a smaller one.
Okay, thank you.
Jeff Thompson.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Dennis, thanks for being here. And I got a question. I was talking to Daryl, and we were talking about a drum sander.
Yeah.
Something about a bottom drum sander on the bass.
Okay. It's called a Flatmaster. And rather than, you know, most drum sanders where the drum is overhead and there's the feed belt underneath it, this thing is more like a jointer. The drum is flush with the in-feed and out-feed table. And as you run the board across, that sandpaper, due to the centrifugal force, will raise up off that drum a little bit. And it's just made for sanding things flat. So it sounds interesting. I ordered one, and they called me today or emailed me and said it's ready to ship. So I'll see whether it's has any value or whether it's a nice dust collector.
You called it the Flatmaster.
Flatmaster. The there's three models, 18-inch, 24-inch, and a 30-inch. The 18-inch only has a 2-inch diameter drum. The 24 and 30-inch has a 4-inch diameter drum.
How long are the in-feed and out-feed cables? This is Brian Burrow.
If I remember correctly, they're each like 9 inches. So long pieces across it. They do sell a fence that you can attach to it. The fence extends over the in-feed and out-feed tables, and you can attach a small piece of material underneath this fence that will support the material that you run through.
What kind of price range are we talking?
The Flatmaster itself, without a motor, is $600. If you buy the motor from them, I bought the 3/4 horse, and it's $400. And then the fence is $279, I think. So if you're interested in making like end grain cutting boards, sanding those flat, if it works, it'll help. It won't pay for itself, but it makes it a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a lot cheaper than a time saver.
Well, the beauty of this sander is, and one of the reasons that we're interested in it, is because you're not limited to the height of what you can run across. So if you had like a box and you were doing dovetails or finger joints or whatever, sometimes getting all four corners exactly the same height can be a challenge. So the box might rock just a little bit, and there's no way to take that little bit off easily. And this sander may work for that. The other thing is that I've been looking at these drum sanders for a long time, and they all seem to have the same problematic piece, and that is that the drum hangs over the top, and it's only attached on one end. So getting it perfectly level with the tables can be problematic. So if you had like an 18-inch sander and you wanted to sand a 24-inch panel, you could run it through, turn it around, and run the other side through it. In theory, you just did a 24-inch panel. The problem is if that bed is tilted even a little bit, or the head a little bit, you're going to get a groove where that drum ends. And plus, doing it from the bottom, you're actually pushing the work across yourself. This sounds very interesting. I'm letting Mr. Walker field test it for me and to see how well it works, because he is tool god and everything.
I always felt guilty about buying tools.
And
my wife, Carol, always told me, you don't have any other hobbies. We're not running short on groceries. You don't go golfing, and you do get satisfaction out of woodworking, and you do make a little bit of money. So Carol kind of encouraged me to do this. Maybe it was just to keep me out of the house. I'm not sure.
Anybody else have any questions?
My question for you, Dennis, when you talked to the Pro Scale guys and they were willing to sell you the Voitsman box, did you get the sense that they were pretty open about sharing what protocol or what bits they were sending over the wire? It looks to me like we can figure out the connectors. So the question is, you know, are the bits that they're sending, are they willing to disclose those, and how hard was it to get them to do that?
Yes, they were very open about doing that. In fact, I bought, after I couldn't find any more Voitsman, I talked to the Pro Scale people, and they referred me to a company in Portland, Oregon, and I don't remember their name, that made different type cables. And the Double Talk speech synthesizer, they had a cable that would work with the Double Talk and the Pro Scale digital readout. The only thing they had to do to the Double Talk was change it to where it was, I remember they had to make pin 9 hot so that it would support to make something work on it. I'm not sure what. But
the power of the scale.
The issue with it is it's not cheap. I'm not sure what Pro Scale sells them for now. Then it was their systems, and the scale to, you know, what I call the ruler was about $300. And then this Double Talk was about $300, and the cable was a couple $100. So it's not a cheap thing to do this, even though it's already been figured out. And so a lot of people don't think it's worth it. And to do this kind of stuff, you know, unless you can find somebody that's willing to do it because they like it, you know, without making a fortune.
I can't tell you the number of people I've encountered who I can't convince that $100 click rule is worth their money.
Well, yeah, it's just like the Tape King tape measure. $350, I think Daryl told me the other day.
Yeah, it's like something like that these days.
Yeah. You know, this digital stuff is nice to monkey with, but it's not cheap. You know, the ones that we probably would use the most, the caliper, the angle cube, and the protractor, price of those are extremely reasonable. I think you can buy that from Wixie. You can get the angle cube for $50, and same with the protractor. And the caliper, from iGauging, last time I checked, about the same.
The nice thing about the angle cube and the protractor is that Mr. Wixie actually had a developer write an app that was voiceover friendly, and it's called Wixie Talk or something. Anyway, you could just download it from the App Store, and it is no more difficult than using that than it would be if you could speak digital scale on the front of it. It's that simple. The reason I wanted to cover this topic tonight, because this comes up a lot on the boards, and I have plenty of interest in digital tools too. And a lot of this stuff, it can be done if you could find the right people and you approach them, you know, in the right manner. Sometimes we want to go up and yell at somebody because their stuff doesn't talk, you know, and that's usually not a good way to start a conversation. You know, Dan started and I started talking with Mr. Wixie. It didn't move fast. It went on for a couple, 3 years, but, you know, we would just remind him every now and then, and he was willing. It's like Dennis said, a lot of times it's just them finding the time too. But that digital lift, you know, that router lift, it talks simply because Dennis contacted MLCS. It wasn't that difficult for the person to make it talk once they knew there was a desire for it, but still you have to be patient with it.
This is Scott. And on the app development part of it, you know, when you're talking about these getting these apps to work with VoiceOver or TalkBack on Android, a lot of times developers don't make them, you know, VoiceOver compatible or whatever, simply because they just don't know about it. And once you approach them, if you approach them nicely, not always, but oftentimes they think, well, that's a really cool idea. And then they just do it. Sometimes you just get lucky that way.
Yep, that's absolutely right.
Yeah, that's what happened with this Pro Power Lift from MLCS. They gave me the email for the guy that wrote the program. I'd never talked to him. It was always been either text messages or email messages. And when I first got the device, it didn't speak all that well. And I contacted his last name's Nixon, and I told him what the issue was and asked him, can he change it? And he did. And he got to where he kind of knew what I was looking for, of what he had to do to get it to work with TalkBack. He made 4 or 5 changes for me. Now it speaks, in my opinion, speaks pretty good.
Anyone else have a question?
As it relates to that lift, can you set it up so that you have 2 different stop points? Like if you want to do SOSH hinges, you know, because in the SOSH hinges, you have to do the one route that's for the outer plate, and then you have to do the other route that, you know, is for where the tab, what I call the tab, or the working part of the hinge goes down in.
Well, there's 3 different screens on this device. And the second screen, you can set up different settings for it with different bits.
Okay.
To where you can set it up and it'll raise the bit to the right height. That's the interesting part that I found is, where do you start with these bits? And what I figured out is you put a plumber's, and I forget what they're called, it's a brass ring that compression
rings.
Rings. I put a little super glue on the half inch shaft of the router bit and slid one of these compression rings up as far as it would go. So when I put that bit in the collet and put that compression ring right down at the collet, it's always at the same height.
Ah.
So that I can raise the bit clear to the top. You know, in the past, I've set what the height needs to be. And then you can lower that bit down to that height. And like I say, you can, I think there's 6 settings that you can set up for preset router bit settings.
So each one of your parts, you're hitting a different set.
Now, do you pass the work over? Because in a router, typically you would, well, I guess if you're routing a groove, you can pass it in both directions. But a lot of times you want to pass in one direction only. So do you pass it over and then you have to touch it and tell it you want it to move to the next increment after you reset the carriage and want to go back in the same direction again?
Well, if you run a dado all the way from not a stop dado, you know, where you run the board clear through the router bit, this thing's not all that helpful. It's where you have a stopped dado and you push it so far one way and then slide it back the other way. The bit discontinuously rises very slowly. So you don't have to set the wood down on a spinning bit to get this stopped dado. Or the same thing with cutting a circle on a router. It's, you know, the bit will raise up as you're cutting, however fast you want it to raise.
So you start at the bottom and you have the router bit spinning and you're passing your piece over the blade and you set up two stops, one at each end, so that you don't travel too far left or right. I'm asking the question, but just making sure I understand the scenario. And as you do that, the blade is coming up. And so at some point it will contact the wood and start grazing it. And then as you keep going, it'll raise up to the depth that you've specified. Is that right?
Right. And you just keep sliding the wood back and forth. You're doing a, you know, what they call a climb cut when you slide it from left to right, but it's not cutting enough. If you do it slow enough, really affect it. You're just making a nice slow cut and as you move that board back and forth.
That makes really good sense because I make these slots for this butterfly owls that I'm doing. I have to pre-hole drill 3/8-inch holes, and then I go from one to the other to make the slot where this, I could set up the stops, go back and forth, and I would come through,
right,
eliminating the drill press totally.
Does something beep to tell you it's reached the top, or do you just know it by the sound?
Once it reaches the height you want it, you just tell by the sound.
Another thing that any router lift can do, one thing that intrigues me is there's some bits, not all things, but there's sometimes in woodworking where this precision stuff is a must. And a lock miter joint is one of those things where a couple thousandths counts from having a beautiful joint to a crummy one. And it's really hard to take my fingers on my little dial under the table and turn it to get a thousandth or two without going less or more than what I want. And that being able to bump that, just that router lift to say, I want to go up a thousandth or two thousandths at a time, you know, to do those joints would make that so much easier, which is another reason why that lift is on my list.
I'm kind of intrigued by a new router bit from Microjig called the Fit Finder. It's got like a spot milled in the body of the bit itself that you can use a physical reference like their Fit Finder, like 1/2 gauge to set it. And it sounds pretty handy.
It could be. Yeah. You know, there's ways to set these bits, of course, without having to have this thing, and you could do that. It's just that, and that always gets me close, but I just trying to get that, and I understand something. I don't know if you ever used a lock miter joint. You'll create a lot of sawdust before you ever get one joint that works, and once you get it, you're great, but the next time you go to use it, you got to go through all that again. But there's like Dennis said, there's like the stop dado thing, or if you were making like these trivet boards and things like that, I run dados all the way through to make them, but it would be nice just to have like a frame or all around the outside of my trivet board, which I can't do that on a table saw, but I could do that with that router lift because Mr. Walker taught me how.
So there's no fence component to this this lift? You can't move the fence digitally?
Well, the lift is just a router plate that goes in your table. It just happens to be it has a motor to raise your router up and down. It's all it does. It just controls the height.
Right. I understand that. I was just asking if there might be like a corresponding fence that could go with it.
Not that I have ever come across. For the just the lift itself is between $500 and $600.
Yeah, you could catch it on sale. I mean, it's no more expensive than any motorized lift really out there. It's cheaper than most. The trick is, you know, if you have it takes a 3.5 horse motor to fit it. If you have to buy the motor, that's more money. But they also make a sleeve that you can put on your, like my, I have a Bosch, a small 1/2 horse Bosch router, and they make a sleeve that'll go on that so it will clamp into that router lift without me having to go out and spend, you know, $300 for a motor. But a 3 horsepower router motor would be nice too. But it's like everything, you know, you start out with one thing, and these price tags, you know, on things, it will nickel and dime you to death. But it's not, like Dennis says, it's a hobby. You know, I don't have other hobbies. I don't have any place else to waste my money. So what the hell?
Can you use any Android device, or do you have to buy one from them?
Okay, that's one thing I was going to mention. They do sell an Android tablet through MLC. Well, it's H Valley now, and it's $50. Don't buy it because you cannot load it. It does not have TalkBack on it, and you cannot install TalkBack on it. But the answer to your question is, from what I've been told, any Android phone or tablet will work with it. If you go to, I don't even know what their website is now.
It's still MLCS. You'll still get there.
Okay. And go to the Powerlift Pro. There's all kinds of videos. And even on YouTube, if you Google the or search for the that lift, you'll come up with videos on it. You know, and they're like all other videos, you know, do this and do that. But you get the sense of what they're trying to do. And if you get real interested in it, then you can call me.
Might take you up on that. I have a Craig router lift at the moment, which I like, but I'm pretty intrigued by this one you're talking about.
Yeah, like I say, anyone that has a real interest in it, I can give me a call and I can go out to the workshop and give you a demo on it.
I thought I'd mention, I haven't heard anybody talk about this, but another digital tool that I've found that's pretty cheap. I forget the exact price, but actually there's a whole little series of, I think, six tools from General Tools, TS Smart something or another. One of the ones that I have is a laser distance measure and hooks via Bluetooth to the iPhone and works pretty well.
Things that are Bluetooth compatible, you know, it opens up a lot of doors that we used to have a cable, which made everything a little harder. Bluetooth can create a lot of opportunities for making things talk these days.
Yeah.
I've heard of the tools that you're talking about from, I think it's General. But I've heard that the apps that are written for the, I think it's on the iPhone, doesn't work that well. But this has been several years ago.
Yeah. I mean, it's the app's definitely not perfect, but it's very, you know, I would consider it very workable. I was able to go around and take measurements of, you know, all of my rooms and save them, give them names, all of that kind of stuff. I mean, there's some things that aren't maybe, you know, labeled perfectly, but I did not need any sighted assistance to, you know, to use the app or anything like that.
Oh, see, that's great. That's great to know. Dennis Walker, and our last guest was Ray Wright, and before that was Mr. George Wurzel. I encourage you, if you have questions, to contact them, and Dennis will talk to you. He talks to me, so he'll talk to anybody. Okay, he has to put up with me.
But yeah, Daryl calls me sometimes twice a week with the same question.
But they're very, very knowledgeable on things, you know. I use them all the time. And that's the great thing about our group. And it's what I'm trying to do with these calls, is to get people to know other people. I wouldn't necessarily yell at Dennis, especially before he has his coffee. But other than that, he's pretty easy to get along with. Mr. Walker, I appreciate you being on the call, sir. I know I'm keeping you up waiting.
Not a problem. Enjoy it.
Yes, thank you, Dennis. It was wonderful, and always good to talk with you.
Hey.
Ryan, good to hear from you, buddy.
Thanks for your time.
Have a great night.
Be sure to check out www4b.org, Woodworkers for the Blind. Become part of the community and learn from others, just like we did from Dennis Walker. Hope you enjoyed, and until next time, bye-bye.